There it is. You've been waiting for it. We've been waiting for it. Wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening, we're so glad you've chosen to tune in to DLC. Downloadable commentary for the week delivered the way we love it to be, and that is completely free thanks to our sponsors this week, Brooklinen, Audible, and Postmates. They're bringing the show to you, DLC, of course, the show all about games in their many forms, games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles, also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Cannata, that's spelled with two N's and one T, and I am joined, as always, by my friend slash co-host slash nemesis, the guy who thought it was a good idea to move during a global pandemic, Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
Hello, Jeff. Yeah, not yet, but soon. I'm also the guy that's going to remind you I am raising money for St. Jude Children's Research Hospital to help kids fight and beat cancer. You can find the link in the show notes here, also pinned on my Twitter account at Spicer. And I will tell you that this Saturday, knock on wood, things change, but it shouldn't change. This Saturday at 8 p.m. Pacific, you, me, and Tim from The Midnight are going to be playing. Well, I'll be playing some Streets of Rage 4 while we just kind of hang out and chat. I figure Streets of Rage will be a nice background game for Tim and us to talk about all the fun things that go into the stuff he's working on and just kind of hang out for a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm so excited. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, that'll be on my Twitch, which is twitch.tv/Christian Spicer.
Yeah. What time on Saturday are we doing that?
8 p.m. is what we talked about.
8 p.m. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Is that not what you said?
No, it is. I just didn't quite remember, but now I do.
All right, well, I mean, also it depends on me getting my internet set up, but let's just say definitively 8 p.m. Saturday.
Are you going to be all sweaty and having moved boxes all day?
And it's okay. Tim and Jeff, just talk about this for a little bit. And I'm just like dying in Streets of Rage over and over again.
I mean, because I don't know what it is about your house, but my house, it's about 98 degrees outside.
Oh, so nice.
In good the moving weather.
With the hot mommies screaming eye puppies.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, we have a lot of video games to talk about, ladies and gentlemen, and we're so excited to do it. We got gaming news. We got new games coming out. We got that Predator to talk about. So many things to get to. And you know what? We have an awesome guest to do it with. You know that DLC always stands for your downloadable Kanata and your downloadable Christian. But this week, I'm so excited because DLC stands for Developer Literary Contributions, because we have the author of the Game Dev Business Handbook, as well as a journalist whose work you've seen at Polygon, at Game Informer, on VentureBeat, so many other places. We're so excited to welcome Mike Futter for the first time. Hey, Mike.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. We're so excited. How you holding up, man? How are things?
You know, it's quarantine.
Yeah.
Kids are doing the distance learning thing, and that's keeping us hopping, but, you know, trying to make the most of it.
Lots of good video games to play right now, that's
yes.
for sure.
Heck yeah. Yeah.
All right, well, let's jump in and start the show the way we always do, with Story of the Week.
Story of the Week, it's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week, it's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happened in the world of games this week. You can always submit stories for our consideration by sending us an email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com or by visiting our subreddit. That's 5x5dlc.reddit.com. There are cool folks hanging out there talking about the show, talking about stories in the video game world. Mike, you are our guest, so you get first pick of stories. What would you consider to be your story of the week?
I added this to the show notes, and I was right after I came out of watching it, that Fortnite concert. Travis Scott, in-game. Man, that was cool. I don't know a lot about Travis Scott. I don't play Fortnite, but I was there for this. And it
That's
was
amazing.
A ton of fun. It was so much fun.
You and 12.3 million of your closest friends, right? We're just hanging out watching the concert.
It was wild.
So what brought you to the yard? You know what I mean? You said you aren't a huge Travis Scott fan. You aren't a Fortnite fan. Was it just how do they pull this off? I mean, obviously they've done concerts in Fortnite before. Mm-hmm. What
what drove you to boot up the game and check out the concert?
I played a little bit of Fortnite. My daughter plays it, and I loved the Star Wars event that they did before Rise of Skywalker. And I wanted to check this out because, you know, right now, obviously, artists in general are losing out on a ton of money from live events, from merchandising. And I thought it was a cool partnership. And it was just like the choreography, the spectacle of it. And it was just a cool moment to be part of. I didn't get to see it the very first night, and I'd heard about it, and I thought, you know, oh no, I'd miss this thing. And it's like, no, we're doing it five times. It's all good. So got up, made sure I had Fortnite installed, jumped in, and like we gathered around the screen and checked it out. You know, it wasn't a very long event, but I think about how that must have been difficult to pull off under normal circumstances when they did the Marshmello concert. But they pulled this off working remotely. And like from a licensing perspective and a contract perspective, and you know, just getting all of the animations together. And I know that Epic tends to work very quickly. Like we've seen them iterate and like add weapons to the game, pull weapons out, and add skins and do cool partnerships. But I feel like this took it to an entirely new level and opened the door, I hope, for more things like this, whether that's in Fortnite or elsewhere, because artists need it right now, and I think we need it right now.
Yeah, this may be the way we see concerts now. You know, they're talking about concerts and live sporting events and those kinds of, you know, 50,000 people in one building type events are going to be the last thing that come back. And maybe this is really how an entire generation is going to experience being together to watch the artists that they like. I mean, that's not out of the realm of possibility that this really becomes a much more commonplace thing. I mean, we talk about it now as being this kind of wild anomaly of, wow, how different and cool and interesting, but it may not be a very many years before this feels more like the way you go see a concert.
It seems like that Fortnite is realizing that dream that Second Life had, but never could quite right, accomplish.
Yeah.
That's so it'll be cool if this opens the door for more artists who are like, you know what, I'm missing out on revenue. This was the cool thing. Like today I saw, I think it was the official Fortnite account, tweet out some merch from the concert. So you can actually go to Travis Scott's website and buy like signed boxes of like Fortnite figures that were designed specifically for this. There's one of the Fortnite Nerf guns that was designed specifically for this. So they're really ramping it up. It's like if you go to a concert, you buy the t-shirt, you buy the sweatshirt, you buy a bunch of merch. It's kind of the same thing, except you're doing it online. And of course, who knows when that's actually going to be delivered because of everything that's going on.
Right. Yeah. Are these digital items or are they actual physical items that get mailed to you?
So there were both. Like in the game, there were some free physical or free digital items you could get just by signing on. And there were some skins and emotes and stuff like that. So there was that digital merch, and I'm sure that he's getting a piece of that pie. But these were physical items that you could order and then have delivered to your house.
That's interesting. I thought that the digital stuff was kind of a no-brainer. Like, you know, you want to give your avatar a t-shirt that said, I saw Travis Scott on whatever day. But the idea of having a physical item, I think that is really interesting. And perhaps we'll see more of that as well, that these virtual moments are important enough that we want to commemorate them by having physical things in our lives, physical, you know, a lot of people get those t-shirts because they want to remember that thing. Mm-hmm. And it's a permanent, it feels more permanent certainly than a digital item. Although, you know, maybe that's changing too. Who knows? But can I just before we even get off this, I want to hear more about, because I'll admit, did not watch this or haven't watched any of the concerts that they've done in Fortnite so far, even though my curiosity is now piqued more than ever. Mm-hmm. How did it physically work? You know, do you have to go to a place in game, or is it you just select a menu item and now you're watching the thing, or how does it work?
So it worked a lot better for this one than it did for the Star Wars one, because for both there was a menu pop-up, and it was like, mm-hmm. you go in to the Battle Royale thing, and it's like, this is what's happening right now. I don't think you could even play a regular Battle Royale match. So you jump, you land, and I think before it started, they just started you on the ground, And then you were in the battle bus, kind of soaring over, and everybody jumped out. But you could see where it was. Like, it wasn't a
wild.
It wasn't a full battle bus run across the map. It started you right over pretty much where you needed to be. And then you jump out, and everybody got a free glider that was to commemorate this. So a lot of people had that one equipped.
Yeah.
You get to the ground. There's a little bit that happens, and then it starts, and he's huge. He's like this, 40-story hologram towering over the map, and he jumps up and like pops everybody up into the air, and wow. There are other holograms, and then he's kind of teleporting around, and then you get teleported to different parts of the map, and then you're underwater, and then you're flying through space, and you've got full control. And that's what was cool about it. It was interactive in that you still had control of your character. You could still emote. There were moments where you were kind of on the ground. You could get to a better vantage point to kind of check things out. And it was neat because I liked the music. Like, again, this was a really interesting introduction to an artist that I don't have a whole lot of experience with. So now I'm like, you know what? I could actually see myself listening to some of this music. So even though obviously for, a concert, you're selling tickets and that's a big source of revenue. No tickets here. You Fortnite's free to play. You can get into the concert for free. You don't have to buy any of the skins. You obviously don't have to buy any of the physical merch. You just get in, and then when it was all over, and it lasts about, 15 minutes, they just left us in a match that had an XP boost. And it wasn't a one-and-done Battle Royale match. It was a first to 125 kills. So that went on for another, 10 or 15 minutes. And if you have any interest in the game, you're racking up huge experience because there's this big XP boost. And there was also a big XP boost that happened around the Star Wars thing as well. That one, there was PvP enabled before the event, so there were people who were just smacking each other with pickaxes and stuff. This one, there wasn't any of that. You got on the ground. I don't think you could even pull out your gun or pull out a pickaxe or anything like that. It started pretty quickly, and then it just went. And it reminded me of the demo scene from the 90s.
Oh, man. That was so few people referenced that. And I was so into that in those days, man. I have a DVD that they put out that compiles some of the best ones. And, man, I still fantasize about finding an old 486 and just I have all that stuff on 3.5-inch floppies somewhere. And I'd love to just reconstitute a PC and make it just go back to all those old Amiga mods and all that stuff. Anyway, I could go for on forever. that is super cool though. I applaud that. Clearly synergy, right? Mm-hmm. It's an ad for the game and it's an ad for the music and it's all an ad for everything and free. So it you really can't give them any grief about it. It's pretty smartly done, pretty well pulled off. That could have been it could have been a recipe for disaster, and it sounds like it was rad.
Yeah, and they've really ironed this out. I know this isn't the first one. I didn't go see the Marshmallow concert. I thought I didn't quite understand it when that happened last year. And if I had today's perspective after having done the Star Wars event and done the Travis Scott concert, if I knew then what I know now, man, I would have been there because, they've really got this down to a science. So I'm so excited to see what they do next.
Well, Christian, that my first inclination is to imagine all of this, but in VR, because when Mike's talking about being launched up in the air and he's 200 feet tall and you're watching it all around you. I mean, that clearly is a neat thing to do on a 2D surface, but when you're in it and you feel like maybe the experience at some point becomes like you're actually standing in a concert, and then also you can do all of these mind bending, physics bending effects on top of that, could this be not just an alternative for going to a concert but actually better than going to a concert?
Yes and no. Yes, it could be an alternative for it, but no, I mean, well, better than the eye of the beholder. I don't think it replaces it. I think it's really, really cool what Fortnite is doing. I think a VR version could be really cool. I think an AR version could be really cool, like in HoloLens, just those demos we played, Jeff, where that opens up and your wall opens. Imagine your wall opens up and, whomever, Travis Scott, whatever, Beyonce comes out of
your house. He's playing in your house.
Yeah, comes out of your wall, like your walls transform into a stage or whatever it is. Yeah. Could be really cool. Or like Tiny Size, they're dancing on your table, you know, like Justin Timberlake's like dancing around on your table or whatever.
Mom, you're standing inside Beyonce right now. Stop it.
But I think stuff like that could be very cool. And I like seeing this stuff in Fortnite, mostly because it just gets me closer and closer to getting a prediction right. I think I kind of already got right when like Quibi premiered a show in there. But I don't think it necessarily replaces a concert in the same way that there's a difference between going to see someone play their own music and someone lip sync to their music or something. You know what I mean? Like right, this is a pre-recorded. And maybe, and who knows, maybe Travis Scott was actually like live rapping and singing. I don't know the specifics, and maybe someone will do that, but it seems like that's much more limited than what was happening here and this time and the other times. And
but in a world where we can't go to places, you know, I mean, hopefully that's something that's not going to last forever, but in a world where we all don't feel super comfortable being around thousands of people.
No, it's very cool. It's very cool. And I mean, people have been doing really great stuff with music for a while. And I like seeing people experiment and do new things. Like for the longest time, I'm a big fan of NPR's Tiny Desk Concert. And that's different. You're not like going to space or doing whatever, but it's like you takes a bunch of bands or awesome musicians, strips them down, and they literally would play like at this little desk in an office, and you'd hear stripped down versions or different versions of songs. And I think they're going to see a lot of artists do fun things in this virtual space, whether it's, you know, Zoom acapella meetings or, you know, SNL experimenting with their second now week of stay at home produced content that they've got a graphics package person for the second week, and there's a lot more.
Yeah, there's a lot more effects.
A lot more effects, which was great. It goes. Yeah. I've been saying it for years. It goes a long way. A good graphic designer and some GFX. But I like this. I like Fortnite doing this. To answer your question, Jeff, I would love to see a VR. Like there are VR concerts already. I think it has a couple of hurdles for it for VR, and those are one, like the nausea thing of just if people can handle it or not. And then the biggest one is barrier of entry. You know, Mike mentioned for Fortnite, like his barrier of entry was like, oh, I forgot to update Fortnite for this. And that's it. That's the only barrier of entry. Anyone can do this on any device, like your phone. You can get in and experience this thing.
Well, I'm imagining a future where we're all wearing glasses, you know? I think that's not that far away.
Got it.
Honestly. But yeah, I obviously. And speaking of, you know, you brought up Saturday Night Live and you brought up VR concerts. I remember one of the first things I watched in VR when I first got my Oculus was the Saturday Night Live 40th anniversary episode that they did. They put out in VR where you're sitting in the audience with all the like super A-list stars all around you. And all I did was just turn and watch the people in the audience reacting, and they don't realize that they're actually on camera also all the time. And that was fascinating.
It's like, oh, Rob Schneider hated that joke.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, it's a cool thing. And Mike's right. It's something I should experience. I'm so interested in what the next one is. And it sounds like, I don't know how much you can attribute to us all staying at home and this all being great content for staying at home, but it's, you know, almost 2 million more people that watched this one than the previous one, which was Marshmallow. So it's trending upward, and they're still growing. So we'll see if this just ever even plateaus or if they're just going to continue being the place to go see concerts with that many people at once. It's wild.
Yeah. I'm just curious who's going to try it next.
Yeah. I wonder, I mean, these have been some high profile artists, but we're not in the stratosphere of a Beyonce or a Justin Timberlake yet.
You I don't know, think we're not far away from Drake. Like Travis Scott was a good pick. He plays, he's, you know, streamed.
Yeah.
Was it a year ago, a year and a half ago, Drake and Ninja, this thing's a success. I don't think we're far from something like that happening.
Yeah. Pretty cool. Christian Spicer, what is your story of the week?
Man, there are some good stories still. Because you and I both love it so much, Jeff, what I want to talk about are these Horizon Zero Dawn 2 or Horizon Zero Dawn sequel concepts or rumors or leaks. And so one.
Wait, before we even get there, I assumed it was Horizon Zero Dawn, and then it would be the sequel would be Horizon something else. right? I thought Zero Dawn was the subtitle for the first game. Not that it would be Horizon Zero Dawn 2 or Horizon Zero Dawn A New Beginning or whatever they would do. It would be Horizons the game, and Zero Dawn was the first entry into the series. Am I crazy?
I think it was called Horizon, just Horizon.
It was Horizon colon Zero Dawn.
No, but I mean, when they first announced it, E3 2014 or whatever, I think it was just like Horizon. And everyone's like, that's a bland name. And then they had, I think, these titles aren't official, so there's a chance it could be two, but I think they've landed on this branding now that I don't think you want to lose that name recognition.
Hmm.
Like The Last of Us Part Two isn't called like There's More of Us.
That's a little apples and oranges, but so okay.
If it matters, it's stylized without a colon. On the box, you've got Horizon in large letters and then Zero Dawn small underneath it, but there's no colon. And that could also be like a Ubisoft thing, how they never use colons in the Assassin's Creed names.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, so, and the chat says the TM is after Dawn. So I trust Mike and the chat.
They would trademark the, I don't know. I think it's cooler.
What might happen there is Horizon would be like a registered trademark, and then Zero Dawn would be just a TM. Mm. But right now it is just the TM is after Horizon Zero Dawn.
We actually have the perfect person on this week to talk about that. Yeah, you know exactly what you're talking about. I don't know what your preference is, everybody. I'm curious what you guys both think, but I actually think it's much cooler if the name is Horizon, you know, First Light or whatever. You know, we go from Zero Dawn to one or two. I don't know what it would be, but I think it would be cooler if Zero Dawn isn't in the second game's title. What do you guys think?
I'm going to go with I like Horizon Zero Dawn as the full title, mostly because, and then I like kind of sequel names, mostly because I still cannot, if a gun to my head, it's 50-50 whether or not I get the current Tomb Raider games in order.
Right.
I just
you want
don't
a number.
Know.
You just need a number.
Just give me a number. Yeah. If the next one's called Horizon 1 Dawn and then Horizon 3 Dawn, I'm okay with that. But I need a number.
What about you, Mike?
I would love to see him do something cool like that. I agree, though. Like, obviously, Tomb Raider, the reboot, the first one's Tomb Raider, but I can't remember which one. I think Shadow was the most recent one, Shadow of the Tomb Raider, because that's the one where stuff got real bad for Lara.
Yeah, but somebody's rising, somebody's doing something else. I don't know when along the timeline do we rise? Do we Shadow? I don't know.
I'd love to see him do something cool, but numbers help.
All right, Christian. So
the rumors
I
here.
I interrupted you. Yeah.
The rumors here are kind of twofold. One is that it's a trilogy, a planned trilogy, which who knows, you know, credibility of rumors. But when the former head of studio is now kind of the head of gaming, I feel like they are supporting what Guerrilla Games is and was doing, which so I think there's probably a better chance that this franchise is given more room to run than maybe before. And then the other part of this rumor is that the sequel, or maybe it won't be the actual official Horizon Dawn 2, but there's a co-op game kind of in development as well that may or may not be like the next step of the story. It might be like a stopgap or something else in this world. And I'm curious, one, Mike, Jeff and I both loved this game. It was our game of show the year it came out.
And also our game of the year. It was both our game of
the year. Game of the year, yes.
It was both, yeah.
Yeah. I'm curious how much you like or, you know, what your feelings towards Horizon Zero Dawn are, Mike. And if you think co-op is an addition that you would get excited about to revisit this universe.
I really liked it. I didn't finish it yet. It's in one of those in-progress things that I got distracted and need to go back to. But I have absolutely loved what I've played. I think co-op would be really interesting. I think, you know, taking down some of the larger robots would be very interesting if you had different players and you have to distract it with one so that you can get to the weak spot with the other one. Like, I think that there's some opportunity here for co-op that would be pretty cool. As long as it doesn't disrupt the narrative flow, because I think that this game has open world games are tricky with narrative to begin with. You throw co-op in there, then you've got, do I have to play everything with my friend? You know,
come on, let's go.
and I'm the kind of guy who it's like, oh, crafting mats. I'm going to pick this and I'm going to pick that. Yeah. And my partner's like, she's like, no, we got to go. Next story beat. Let's go.
I want to listen to the person talking. No, no. Moving on. We got 10 things to kill.
Yeah, you're trying to listen to something. Your partner triggers like the saber tooth. That's like, you're like, oh no, you went too far.
Yeah.
You awoke the alligator.
I got to say though, if they do a co-op mode, it's got to be Aloy and B-Loy, right? Right? B-Loy or GTFO, right?
Hey, it's Jeff, B-Loy. Jeff, you no longer get to name the sequels, by the way. I'm sorry. I think to me, as someone who's going to start playing this to stream it for St. Jude, for the fundraising I'm doing, to me, I feel like, is co-op, does that already exist? And is it Monster Hunter World? Like, is that the approach? Like a pared down version of, again, haven't played, about to start. But like a less complex, because that sounds interesting to me of like, oh, that's a game where you're taking down these big beasts working together. Story's never been the biggest part of those games, but maybe that's the angle.
First of all, we should say that the rumors all around this, which everybody's been saying for a while, are that this is a PS5 game and maybe even a PS5 launch game. Sources say that it is going to be gigantic in scope with a bigger emphasis on player freedom and a larger world. So all that sounds really exciting to me. I tend to get really super ramped up when a franchise says you're going to allow for co-op and then don't ever use that feature because I just can't. Scheduling is hard at this point in my life with friends, and which is super depressing because I always want to, because I remember those days of playing through Halo Combat Evolved in co-op with my friend the whole time because we were sitting in front of the TV and we played through the whole thing on legendary difficulty and it was just amazing. And I always just want to recapture those moments of playing things co-op, and then life gets in the way.
Time to get your kids to cowboy up, you know?
I know, right? I'm trying to train my son, man. We're playing that Mario. He loves it.
Well, you got to level them both up. You got a his and hers right there. Come on, that's a party of three. You're ready to go.
Yeah. Mike, do you think this is a PS5 launch game? Or do you think it's later than that?
Launch window, I'd hope. I think we're far enough away from Horizon Zero Dawn that a launch window sequel wouldn't be out of the question. And in fact, it would not surprise me, given that Guerrilla's obviously going to be in the lead here, and Herman Holst is now the head of studios, is his current title right now. He was just promoted. That wouldn't be a surprise to see this in a sizzle reel or as part of their reveal strategy. Like, hey, look at how beautiful this is. Oh, and then it turns around and it's Aloy. It's like, oh, it's huge. You know, character we know and love in a series that we really loved on the PS4. It's going to be even better on PS5. I absolutely see this as being a launch window game, if not a launch day game.
I love this game, and even the longer we get from it, the more it sort of raised in my estimation. I loved it at the time. As Christian said, we both gave it our game of the year that year. But I, you know, even as I've played more and more open world games since then, it's so well done. The story is fantastic. The world seems fresh and interesting. All of the trappings. Yes, it got a lot of, I think, criticism is the wrong word, but maybe people didn't put it as high in their estimation as it could have been because it felt like a pastiche of a lot of other things. It felt maybe like it was just using a lot of established tropes that you've seen before.
It came out the same week as Zelda too, where Zelda was like, yeah, climb everything. And Horizon Zero Dawn was very much, you know, traditional. And that regard was like, this rock you can climb, this rock just as big can't climb.
Yeah. I think you're right. I forgot that data point, but you're right. It got heavily overshadowed by Breath of the Wild, as a lot of people think maybe it should have. I prefer it to Breath of the Wild personally, but this story says that it ended up selling over 10 million copies. So it was a huge game. It's not, it stood toe to toe with Breath of the Wild. That's for sure.
I think it served this interesting purpose of, hey, we do need to introduce some new IPs this generation. Whereas God of War was like, we're going to revisit an IP, you know, and love in a very different way. This was, hey, this is a new IP. I don't know how many systems this sold, but I think a sequel will absolutely move PlayStation 5.
Yeah. Well, let's continue talking about upcoming things and reveals and the new consoles and continue to talking about the shifting landscape that is E3 and 2020 in general and how things are going to be revealed, because we got new stories from an analyst at Nikko Partners, who's talking about the idea that game reveals for both PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series X, as well as a lot of next-gen games that would have been revealed during an E3 2020, which is now not happening, are being rescheduled and are being shuffled around. So we've definitely heard that there are plans to do digital press conferences from some companies. There will be the Nintendo Direct style videos from some companies talking about the things that they would have announced inside a press conference or at the E3 event. But it sounds like a lot of these companies are also recognizing the opportunity to not concentrate all of that stuff in the same week in June when everybody else would be doing it, and that the entire calendar has now opened up and we are getting things that may be revealed earlier, some may be revealed later, and there will be a more staggered approach to the what used to be a very, you know, machine gun of game, all these huge things being announced all at the same time. We know that both Microsoft and Sony still want to do big announcement moments for their next gen slate. And I can imagine that when you are announcing new hardware, you would want to announce a bunch of games at once. But perhaps a lot of the big third party publishers will spread things out. And I want to know, Mike, what you think about that. Do you think that from an end user perspective, from a fan perspective, do you think that is better to have more things get more spotlights over a longer period of time? Or would you prefer that big marquee moment where everything seems to be happening and you get to see it all laid out in front of you?
I think there's value to both. And I think we are going to see those big marquee moments happening digitally. We know that the PC gaming show is happening when it was scheduled to happen during the week that was E3. And then IGN is doing its big thing with some publishers. But I think if you look at the white space around that and see which publishers haven't announced anything specific, those are the ones that might be shifting a little bit out. It gives our developers more time. They're not rushing to do a build or to do a trailer or any of those things that take away from development time. Maybe give them an extra month, an extra 2 months. We know that Gamescom is going to be digital. So it could be that they're like, okay, well, if we're not going to do something in June, maybe we do it in July, or maybe we do it around that Gamescom push. I think this is going to be a great summer for players. I think that there is going to be a constant flow of news in a way that we haven't seen before, because we're moving off of those two hotspots, that E3 and Gamescom centralization. And yeah, people are going to take advantage of that time in the middle, and it's going to make for an interesting July.
Yeah, I'm kind of encouraged by it. I think certainly doing a show like this, it's more fun to have news that we can really sink our teeth into rather than trying to get through this parade of things all in 3 days.
Yeah, if it's all going to be released like right after we record, though, you got to understand every week we'll be like, that's a good show. And they'll be like, news.
That's more a function of us and our luck than anything else. That's just the DLC curse, I guess.
It's our Madden curse. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But Christian, do you like this plan? Is it to feel like, hey, it's cooler to have, you know, on a weird Thursday in some weird week in May or July or whatever, there's a cool WB event. And then, you know, there's a June thing for Microsoft, and there's it's all just lots more blips to be excited about? Or do you want that big A/B testing version of, hey, everybody's showing their stuff, who wows me the most?
I like the big press conferences. I enjoy them. I think they're fun to sit and watch and, you know, live tweet or watch live in person with friends. If, you know, I've been fortunate to go to the event, I think they're very fun. So the nostalgia side of me does miss that. But I also like, you know, watching things from the comfort of my own home and getting excited about things. And I think we're going to see a lot of people try it this year, and it won't be great, right? This is going to be the marshmallow concert. It's going to be very good, but Travis Scott's going to do better next year. You know, like, they're going to be figuring this out. They're going to get the beats wrong. They're going to come out too early. It's not going to be able to carry them through long enough. There's going to be some awkward stuff, but Rockstar, whatever they do, whenever they do it, they always seem to do it right in terms of promotion and scale. They're a company that I think will continue to be fine without this. They sat out E3 most of the time anyway. I think Microsoft's digital showcase, whatever they're doing, is going to be pretty excellent. I'm a less optimistic that Sony's is going to be great. I think it will be very good. But for so many years, Sony did such a great job at those live press conferences reacting because they were second, you know, they were very fluid. And for years back from the PlayStation 1, I think it was, you know, price point when they came out on stage and just dropped that hammer. Nintendo does really good at it. I think they'll continue to be great. I'm curious to see like Bethesda's transition, what WB does, because there is something about having all of your, you know, packing the front five rows with your rabid fans that brings a different energy. That said, do you get to have a much more produced, official looking thing without awkward moments of the Wii remote not working when you're trying to demo it for the first time, Kinect being a little janky the first time, all the time. So I think most companies will do this really well. I think what they might not get the traction out of it that they want because there will be something else coming later. The general news in the world dominates so many headlines still. And then in the United States, at least, as we start gearing up more and more and more towards November, election headlines are going to be bigger. So I think it's going to be harder to have the USA Today, you know, cover story thing that E3 used to bring some people. But I do think we'll see companies get even smarter at this as it goes on.
I have a question for you guys. So one of the big challenges this year is that it's a console launch year, and you've got people who can't walk into stores, who can't go to a demo kiosk, who can't go to a public E3 or go to any of those public events like EA Play and get their hands on the next gen consoles. Do you think that's going to have an impact on how players approach the PlayStation 5 and the Xbox Series X, given that they might not have a chance to touch it until when it's out, maybe?
I certainly think that there's going to be a lot of different – I mean, I think the bigger thing will be the crazy economic world we'll be in. If you're dropping a $400 to $500 new entertainment device on a world where there's 10 to 15% unemployment, I think that will have a huge impact. Hopefully, we're not there in November or whenever that happens, but – there's a lot of question marks for that. And I think there are valid points to be made about not being able to go into a store or not being able to touch a thing. I would guess the availability of these things is going to be limited anyway in 2020, and they will sell out easily their stock just with people like me who doesn't care
them like just toilet paper. You have so many.
Yeah, by the way, if you want yours, no. I will buy it no matter what, because I'm a sucker and need to have the newest, latest, best. So I'm already, you know, in mentally. And I think there are a lot of, you know, what people call hardcore or just enthusiasts who are super excited about new hardware and have been chomping at the bit for a while, that the limited availability of these things will be well spoken for. But I do think over the longer term, I think there will be a much slower cycle, much slower uptake on transition to a new cycle, which is why I think one of the reasons we're seeing these companies lean into the, hey, everything is going to be available on everything mantra, where it's going to be more like, you know, I anticipate us seeing Sony adopting a lot of what Microsoft has been saying, which is like, hey, Last of Us 2 is going to be a launch title for PS5, but you can play it on PS4. You know, there'll be, I don't know if they'll do it with Horizon Zero Dawn 2. I don't know how much of that is exclusive to the PS5, but we did read in that story that it started out life as a PS4 game. So maybe there are ways for them to spread things across multiple generations more. And I think that may just be a necessity going forward. But Christian, what do you think?
It's not one of our stories, but those Last of Us 2 allegedly getting room story leaks is bumming me out. I want to play that game, and I have to block so many terms on Twitter now.
We should be playing it right now, right? It should be out.
I think it's like May. I
thought. Oh, was it May? Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, I'm back. I think Microsoft has spoken to this, right? And I don't think Sony has quite addressed it the same way, other than like the Spider-Man load times or whatever. I agree with you, Jeff, that I think there are enough of the enthusiast, you know, audience that will snap up these consoles. I agree with you that I think they will be in shorter supply if they come out in 2020, which I still think is over 50%. I still think there's a greater chance that they do hit this year. But I agree with Mike that I think for the, I don't want to say average, but like for a lot of people, I think this will be their first foray into console buying where they don't see it at the store shelves. And if, at a $500, whatever it is too high of like a air quote impulse buy. But it's different when you're like, oh, I'm going to go to Target. And, oh, there it's there. Oh, crap. Oh, they have one. I'm buying, you know, whatever that is. And I remember the first time I bought, I don't remember when, but I remember like the moment with my mom where I bought like all new school clothes for the first time, like online. Like to me, that was always like, you never want to buy, yeah, I'll buy some stuff online, but not clothes. I want to feel that. I want to, and we were like, done. We bought it all online. And I think consoles and tech is going that way too.
You're a junior in college and your mom bought you all your new clothes. It was adorable.
Yeah. No, in college I wore track clothes everywhere I could. And I remember, small tangent, we had to buy a new dishwasher not too long ago. And it was a weird spot for us where we found the one we wanted by like doing, you know, like wire cutter or whatever, right? Like Tom's Guide, reading research stuff, CNET, whatever. And then, but we couldn't, there were like two that we were kind of deciding between and we couldn't look at them anywhere. Like, Home Depot didn't have that one. Sears didn't have that. It's like Best Buy had one, but not that. We went to like four stores to look at all of them because we wanted to make sure we have a little larger dinner plate like fits in it. But we're in a place now where even that, it's like you buy it online, you don't see it. And so I think console, they're going to start that now too, and people will be okay. It's without playing the Toys R Us kiosk of it, but I do think it will be a slower adoption for some folks because of that.
Love the idea of you walking into a Home Depot with your dinner plate to see if it'll fit in the. So we have a larger size dinner plate. Can we just bring it into the store and?
Yeah, I'm not going to drop that much coin on a dishwasher and have it not work, even with, you know, a free return. You know how much of a hassle that is to get it uninstalled? And our dishwasher is incredible, and I love it.
So I have one more story that I want to run by you guys, but first I want to thank our first sponsor, which is Brooklyn and my sheets. Oh, my sheets. We are staying at home these days, and I hope you are too, dear listener. But when you're home, there are creature comforts that I think mean even more. Certainly, one of the ones that means even more to me is a very, very comfy bed, because it feels like my sleep is even more precious to me these days. And Brooklinen is a company that is all about making small changes to your everyday life that can lead to positive lifestyle changes. The right towel in the bathroom, the right loungewear, the right bedding. I, for one, have gone all in on Brooklyn. We have two sets of Brooklyn sheets, and it's the only thing I'm willing to sleep on these days because it's so comfortable. It's that luxury feeling without the luxury price. I'm sold on it. I didn't realize how scratchy my sheets were before I had Brooklyn, and now I just don't want to sleep on anything else. They offer lots more beyond the bedroom, by the way. As I said, there are these super plush towels that are ultra light. There are shower curtains now. They have silk eye masks, even loungewear, making you feel like you've never even left your bed. Pretty great. I'm excited to try some of that stuff myself. I love a good towel. I want to try their towels. They're super plush. That sounds amazing. Because I'm so happy with our Brooklinen sheets. They come in a variety of colors and styles. We have two different ones. And you don't even really have to take my word for it. There are over 50,000 five-star reviews and counting for Brooklinen. And people love them. Brooklinen.com is the perfect place to start making small changes that make big differences. And Brooklinen is so confident in their products that all of their sheets, comforters, loungewear, and towels come with a lifetime warranty. Lifetime. So go on, make yourself comfortable. You get 10% off your first order and free shipping when you use promo code DLC only at brooklinen.com. That's brooklinen.com. Promo code DLC. Brooklinen, they're delightful. All right. So the last story I wanted to bring up, we can't not comment on the Xbox Series X logo, because evidently it has been revealed, although not officially, but there is a trademark page for the new Xbox Series X logo. Obviously, we are an audio podcast, so you can't see it, but I urge you guys to check it out if you have not, because we're going to talk about it. And Mike, what do you think of the Xbox Series X logo? It seems it's very stark. Mm-hmm. It's very almost industrial looking. It's very, what's the word I'm looking for? It almost looks like a caution sign. it's a lot of straight edges and lines.
Yeah, it's sharp. It's a very sharp logo. I think one of the things that jumps out to me is they are really going for this motor vehicle like association, where Xbox is the make and Series X is the model. Right. And that opens the door for them. I mean, I think it'll look better when it's on the hardware itself. The interesting thing to me is we didn't actually see the new Xbox logo when they redid it for the Xbox One until the day of the Xbox One reveal in May 2013.
Right.
So I remember writing that story. So it's weird that we're kind of seeing it this early, but it is a significant departure, whereas the shift from Xbox 360 to Xbox One wasn't that major.
Yeah. Yeah, it still had that like almost like a ninja, you know, it's had the sharp thin lines on the X. This looks like a stencil. This looks mm-hmm. like you know, it's right now it's black and white. We don't know if it'll actually be black and white. And it certainly seems to be – it has series written, you know, flipped 90 degrees and written vertically, and then this big X that looks stenciled. And it certainly seems to be setting up series whatever, series Y, series A, series B, whatever they're going to do as this line of consoles, as we've heard rumored for quite a long time, with a very inexpensive one you know, is more like just a web box. So maybe that's part of the branding idea. Christian, what's your take on the logo?
I like it. And I agree with Mike. I think it is leaning into that automobile, and something that Apple had tried before too, with like the S or the XR, and how you kind of differentiate within a same model line. And I think, you know, Microsoft hasn't necessarily hidden the fact that they're looking to do that, and both Sony and Microsoft have done it this gen as well with the Pro and One X. And I think designing, assuming this is the real deal that they use, designing a logo around that makes sense, where you have Xbox and then what it is. And I think that works well going forward as well. I mean, it's not as elegant as Horizon Zero Dawn, the day after the dawn, but you know, it works, I think.
Zero plus one dawn.
Horizon Zero Dawn, the prequel. But I like it. I think it looks good. I think assuming again, this is legit, but the image that is out, it was trademarked, I think it fits the design of the box very well. And it's you know, sharp corners, right angles or whatever, right? Like it fits a rectangular prism style shape well. It's not breathing, you know, the way the Xbox 360 was inhaling or whatever. So I think it all works pretty well. And I think it also on the top, or I guess side of the Series X, it kind of has those vents. I think it looks like it could fit around that area too. I think it works, and I'm excited to see, you know, what they do in terms of the other series. I think that's the thing that excites me the most, and see how they support and how games kind of drive across all of their family of hardware.
I'd like to see them just double down on X's. You know, we got Xbox Series X and we have Xbox One X. I think the next one should be Xbox Series XX.
Well, I hear Dave Mira Triple X is going to be a launch title on it. So they're bringing the franchise back.
Yeah, Dave Mira.
Oh, acclaim.
All right, speaking of games, let's talk about the games that we have been playing in a segment we call the playlist. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us on the playlist. Let's start with the big new release. Mike, I know you have been playing Predator Hunting Grounds, as have I. What do you think of it? Predator Hunting Grounds, made by the same folks that gave us Friday the 13th, the video game, which started out as a joke of hilarious glitches and weird errors and turned kind of into a thing people really love. Predator Hunting Grounds, another 80s franchise, film franchise, turned into a asymmetrical, competitive first person, well, not even first, it's third person, really, game. What do you think of Predator Hunting Grounds?
I am a sucker for 4v1, and this is scratching the itch. It is, man, it's better than our initial experience would have led us to believe, because we had massive problems last night with people receiving invites and getting into a lobby, and there's some UI and UX stuff. But man, once you are in and you've got four people in this fire team, and it's set up just like the 80s movie where you're four soldiers, they have a thing that they've got to do, and the Predator's like, I'm going to mess up your day. And that whole shift on the formula where the four players aren't hunting the Predator. They're on a mission, and the mission has like three random objectives that are put together into kind of a little bit of narrative. Like you have to go and find this money, and then you have to destroy the money, and then you have to go upload something. And all the while, the Predator is jumping around in the trees doing Predcore, which is super drone worthy.
I know. It literally says that in the menu. Predcore is the movement style of the Predator. You know, really Predcore? Okay.
No, it's all in right. The movie. You don't, but he yells it just like in The Office. Like, Predcore!
Predcore! Predcore! Because he calls himself the Predator.
The last thing you hear before you get killed is Predcore! Expletive. And then, you know.
I totally agree with you, Mike, that the genius is that the it's a 4v1, but the four are playing a cooperative campaign mode. They're playing a cooperative campaign game against the CPU. You're fighting AI-controlled bad guys and racking up points. I'm playing a game, a normal game. I'm playing a normal third-person shooter game. I'm playing Ghost Recon or whatever. And along comes another player who's super powerful hunting me at the same time. That little tweak to the formula is huge, because all of a sudden now you feel like you're being hunted. You feel like this normal progress of things that you've done in many video games over and over is disrupted by this wild new feeling of not being safe all the time, because you're dealing with bad guys that you would be dealing with in a video game that are, you know, trying to flank you and, you know, coming out, and you're defending a spot where they're going to come and try to stop you from, you know, hacking their mainframe and all that stuff that you do in video games. But also another player who has superpowers is hunting you. It's so I did not. These are not the kinds of games that I love. These are not the kinds of games that I tend to enjoy and play a lot. I'm not super into multiplayer only shooters. It's just not the kind of games I prefer. I am shocked at how much fun I'm having with Predator Hunting Grounds. Shocked.
It's definitely a thing, and it's brutal. Like, even when you're just playing as the fire team and you're shooting the AI, like taking a shotgun to some like soldier's head and then it just disappearing, it's bloody. I mean, it's not just the Predator who's doing gross bloody stuff.
Yeah. And the Predator, you know, so it is a multiplayer only game. You queue for matchmaking. I know you've been playing with friends, and I want to hear how that goes, but I've been queuing up in quick play, and basically the wait times are like 20 seconds if you want to be one of the fire team, or 5 minutes plus if you want to be the Predator. So I've basically not played the Predator very much at all. So I really can't speak to that too much. But I have played enough of the Predator to know that I think that they really nailed the movement and the feel of a character that I know and am familiar with from the films, but also a character that feels very powerful. Mm-hmm. You know, it going into the infrared that we all know from Predator movies actually is useful. His loadout, at least the first level version, this game also has a progression path, and you can open up more powerful accoutrement for Predator to be using weapons and things. But the early ones, you have, you know, spiky wrist knives, and you have that cool triple dot laser. Yeah, yeah. But it feels awesome how you lock on with it and shoot it. I mean, it feels like the movie. It's really well done. And as you said, that Pred Core, which feels a little bit like which Assassin's Creed is the one where they introduced climbing through trees. You know, it was the American Revolution one, I think.
AC3.
Yeah, yeah. Where I thought they did a really good job in AC3 of making you feel like jumping from treetop to treetop and along branches and stuff was fluid. But I feel like this game takes it to a whole other level of just how being in the trees is better. It's preferred. You just feel more powerful up there.
Yeah, I like it. And, you know, navigating it can be a little tricky. But there are times where you do want to, like, jump onto the ground. And the leap mechanic where you hold, I think it's on the controller, it's the R1 button. Right. And then you can, as you're coming down, hit the trigger and, like, slam into somebody to do a huge amount of damage. But you have to be really smart because if you hit one person and the rest of the fire team is right there, you're going to get hurt. The Predator is really strong, but he's also kind of squishy.
Yeah.
If you're not careful. My first two games, believe me,
I'm not good at these kinds of games. My first two games, I got Predator kills both times. But then both times I also died from the Predator exploding in a massive explosion.
I took out all of my friends in an explosion the first time because we didn't know exactly. They didn't know what was going on. So I had the benefit of, ha, 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 you're all noobs right now. And after
the radius is huge.
Oh, it is.
That thing.
You have to run. Like, there is a way to disarm it, apparently. If you shoot his mask off, and then you can, there's like this disarming thing. We haven't figured it out yet. But there is a way to survive that and completely defeat the Predator.
Yeah.
But like, kneeling on the ground while you're like self-destructing and laughing, because the Predator, he has this deep, throaty laugh as he's like getting ready to explode.
Yeah.
Predcore.
It is they do a really, really good job of adding in a lot of horror-like elements. I mean, obviously they made the Friday the 13th game, which is a straight-up horror game. But recognizing that Predator isn't just an action movie, it is a little bit of a horror action movie. And, you know, I've been playing with headphones on, and you are, you know, as the fire team, which, side note, much more fun to play than I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be a game where, like, all I want to do is play as Predator. But the fire team is really fun to play. And, you know, you'll be doing this normal mission and trying to accomplish all your goals and, you know, splitting, you know, keeping the team together or splitting up or whatever you're doing to do all the little objectives that you need to do. And then all of a sudden in your ear, you hear that Predator sound.
Or hear him on cloak.
Yes, yes. Oh, he's there. Or you'll see a shimmer, you know, of the cloak device shimmer in the distance on the trees. And you're like, oh, there he is. And then you'll see the laser, you know, the shoulder cannon laser thing aim at somebody. It's such a cool feeling of spotting him and feel like you're being hunted and trying to fight back and everybody booking it to the next place. And I am shocked at how much fun I'm having with this game. It's really, there's not a lot to it, honestly. It feels like even the progression feels a little thin. And even, you know, in the very little amount of time I've played it, there are also loot boxes with cosmetics. And I think I've opened like the same cosmetic 3 or 4 times, you know? So it's like, clearly there's not a lot here yet, but it's very promising and a lot of fun.
Yeah. And it's not a full price game. It's $40 for the standard edition, 60 if you want to get the, like, there's some additional cosmetics with like a digital collector's edition. One tip when you're playing the fire team, are you playing on controller or are you playing on keyboard?
Yeah, I'm playing on PlayStation 4, so I'm playing on controller.
Okay, I'm playing on PC with a controller for the most part too. If you tap up on the D-pad when you see the Predator, you actually mark them until they until they're out of sight. So you get a little bit of advantage. So even if the Predator is jumping through the trees, you can, as long as you don't break line of sight, you can kind of call out where it is.
That's cool.
It only lasts for a short amount of time because a smart Predator will get the heck out of there and try to circle around.
Yeah, it's fun. And, you know, as the Predator, if you need health, you'll have to like eat a wild boar, and there's cool stuff. Like it's clever. It's fun. The movement mechanics as a Predator are, I found to be really fun and really feel powerful. I didn't expect much from it, to be honest, and it exceeded my expectations. So I guess that's why I'm so enthusiastic about it. And Christian, you know, I don't really love these games. There was a time, Christian, where we kind of thought these asymmetrical 4v1 games were kind of going to be the next big thing. And then Evolve didn't really go anywhere. And there were a few other ones that just sort of kind of languished a bit. And it never really became a very big subgenre. But they are kind of fun.
I think they're very fun. I have yet to play Predator. I think what happened is Battle Royale, to be perfectly honest. And we talked about it. I forget who wrote the article, so I apologize to that individual. Maybe it was a series of tweets. But like the fun of Battle Royale, how you're always having, even when you lose, you're having fun because you're in the next game. And remember that, Jeff, we talked about?
Yeah.
And I think that's what, and I haven't played Predator, but that's what these 4v1 style games kind of lack, or had lacked before, where you get to a point where you're like, well, this, I'm not having fun. And I think Battle Royale kind of upended this, but I like this style of gameplay. And I think when done properly, it's very engaging. And speaking of a game that I want to come back, so slight tangent, and then we can get back to this. Pac-Man Championship Edition 2 is currently free, I believe, on all platforms. Steam, yes. not Switch. I don't know if that came
back. Xbox, PS4, and PC.
And PC. And it is excellent.
Switch is the place that I'd want to play it most, though.
Yeah, I think Switch has it's a different game. It might be like DX. It's not actually Championship 2. It's an excellent game. Pac-Man Championship Edition, any version of it, is an excellent game. And it reminded me, and Predator and all of this, reminded me of Pac-Man Versus, which is an arcade game that's out kind of now, or was at arcades. And also, it was an incredible game that was on GameCube, where you'd plug in your GBA, connect to your GameCube. One person would play as Pac-Man on the GBA, and you'd have like the full screen. And everyone else would be looking at the TV and playing as ghosts.
Yeah, I remember that, dude. You cool. played a lot of that.
It was
so
good. And your quadrant.
You needed to buy that goofy peripheral to even allow that to happen.
You needed the adapter cable to get to the GBA to the GameCube. Yeah. And on the TV, as a ghost, you couldn't see the full screen. You could just see like your circle. But when you got close to Pac-Man, it'd go wide. So you'd be like, top left, top left. And like the other ghost would go there. Meanwhile, Pac-Man is playing just standard Pac-Man. I love that game. And I think they tried to do it one other time too, but I want that game to come back, especially now with like social distancing. I want that game with like also video camera. So like the top right screen is like a four quadrant of everybody's face of everybody playing. And then anyway, tangent. So I love the idea of this style of game is what I'm saying.
There's some PSVR games that are kind of like that too, where one person's in VR and the other people are not. And I think that some Switch stuff like that too, right? Where anyway, but I think there's where one person has a control over a more powerful thing or is doing a more powerful thing. I mean, even Keep Talking and No One Explodes is a little like that.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Yeah. And I love stuff like that. And then the chat says that Hero Shooters maybe upended this style of game more than Battle Royale. I don't disagree, but I would say both. Like other things came along that give either a feeling of instantaneous, always fun, or satisfied that feeling of I feel different enough that unfortunately this game requires to be its best. Both playing the Predator and the Soldier both need to feel fun, but they need to feel different. And I think that's very hard to do.
They nailed it as far as I'm concerned. I mean, playing the Soldier feels like you're playing a regular first person shooter and it just happens. You happen to be hunted by another player.
That's
so
cool.
It's not. Yeah, I think it's cool. Let's also talk about Final Fantasy VII Remake. I've talked about it a few weeks now, but I know reading your tweets, Mike, as I follow you normally, you were talking about going back to the original game too, right?
I played a little bit of it. There was what jumped out at me with Remake was when you meet Aerith for the first time. It struck me how well they translated the original game into the way she looks in Final Fantasy VII Remake. Obviously, there's a huge gap in graphical quality. There's a huge gap in time that's gone between these two games. But if I think about what Aerith looks like in my mind's eye, she looks exactly like she does in Final Fantasy VII Remake. And I think that's a testament to how well they captured the essence of the game, even while making massive changes to it.
Yeah. The costuming is so interesting to me because they had just a few polygons in the early games, and yet the costumes feel like, oh, that's what they were. That's what she was wearing. You know, that's, but of course it's much more detailed and realistic. So are you enjoying the game?
I am. I'm right at the end of chapter 4, I think.
Okay.
So I'm not super far into it, but I'm loving the materia system. I'm enjoying, you know, kind of the way they're fleshing out this part of the story. Obviously, one of the big questions going into this was, how are they turning Midgar into its own game when that wasn't that huge a section of the original? But I think they're doing a really good job with character development for Biggs and Wedge and Jesse and making it all really interesting. And that combat system's fantastic.
Yeah, the world building, I think, is the biggest strength of the remake. It was a strength of all the Final Fantasy games. They really do a good job of creating these interesting places. And I think the doubling down of that in the remake is impressive. And they really thought through all of the locations and how it all works together and all the relationship between the slums and the, you know, the city sections. And you really get a sense that it feels like much more lived in place than ever before, which is pretty cool. And I know I'm still pushing my way through it. And somebody sent me an email saying, hey, you know, every time you talk about Final Fantasy VII Remake, you're harping on something and talking negatively about it. And then you end by saying, but I really like it and I'm still playing. And I feel like I might be doing that again this week. But I guess it's because so much of it is excellent. The things that are my gripes stick out more. And I tend to bring them up. But, you know, the game does a lot of things very, very well. World building, one of them. Visual, another. It's hard, you know, us talking about Horizon Zero Dawn at the beginning of the show. It's difficult for me to not compare games like Horizon Zero Dawn or Assassin's Creed Odyssey to something like a Final Fantasy VII Remake. Obviously, this is remaking something that's very much older. But there's so many things where I feel like it comes up short in comparison to those games, like side quest writing. And it feels so much of what you do in the side quest just feels like padding and doesn't really actually feel interesting. Whereas I think both of the games I mentioned, Horizon Zero Dawn and Assassin's Creed Odyssey, have such interesting side quests that I'm really drawn to do them. I feel like I do the side quests in Final Fantasy VII Remake because they're there, because I want the XP. I'm just sort of grooving along. It's not particularly interesting for me to track down cats or, you know, talk to all the little kids that are smacking things with wooden swords, or, you know, it feels more like tedium. And I feel like the writing could be stronger. I feel like the voice acting could be stronger. I feel There are things that have improved that this game I don't feel like has caught up with yet. And maybe that's baggage from being an older game, but I don't think so, because so much of the other parts of it are improved and have caught up. So I don't know.
There's one thing that Horizon Zero Dawn does really well with regard to side quests. It references them later. It does make them feel like, okay, you did this thing, and yes, technically you didn't have to do this thing, but it makes it feel less like a side quest and more of just texture for the game.
Yeah. I think that's a great point. It really rewards the time you put in by making it feel like it was invested wisely. It wasn't just an XP grind. It was something that contributed to the story that they're telling over a longer period. Yeah, and I just get so frustrated when it pulls command out of my hands and makes, you know, I'm moving through tight spaces at an excruciatingly slow pace, and it sort of almost takes control of it for me and then doesn't, and I still have to push forward. There's so many little nitpicks that I have in what is otherwise a really excellent package it's enough that I go, man, I don't have those kind of gripes with a game like Assassin's Creed Odyssey or Horizon Zero Dawn. I just don't.
I wonder how much of that is. I don't know what your machine sounds like when it's running it, but my PS4 sounds like it's going to take off when it's running Final Fantasy VII Remake. And I wonder, I mean, again, this is a game that if you buy it physically, comes on two discs. You install the data disc and you play on a play disc. So again, it gives you a sense of the scope of the game and the size of the game. Yeah. I wonder how much of that is simply going to be alleviated as we transition to the next generation with solid state drives. Because some of that slow moving through tight spaces is loading. And I think about like Jedi Fallen Order, which did that a lot. Where you have those space transitions.
Yeah, that's a good point. Good point. Maybe I should, you know, wait and play Final Fantasy VII Remake on my PlayStation 5 someday. It's like just sliding right through those tight spaces.
Like clouds all greased up.
Yeah, exactly. I love a good grease cloud. But that's not the only Final Fantasy you're playing. I know a lot of people are really high on Final Fantasy 14 right now, which is... still, you know, what a wild story of that game. That how it has really been a phoenix and has become really one of, I think, the most celebrated MMOs out there now.
It is. And that A Realm Reborn remake, when they launched it, it failed. They spent the money and the time to rebuild it. Now it's huge. I don't play MMOs. I have tried multiple MMOs. None of them have hooked me. When we were deciding that we were going to sit down and play Final Fantasy 14, Amanda and I, like, she's like, you're going to hate it. You were absolutely going to hate it. You don't like MMOs. I'm like, well, look, let's try it for a month and see what happens. And boy, it's so good. There is so much to it. And the crafting in games in general can be pretty tedious, but there's actually a really interesting crafting mechanism here where you have to look, think about how much, you know, how the quality of the item at any given time and, you know, which skills you're going to use. And because high quality means so much more than regular, especially when you're making it for a combat item. So I've actually taken, we are almost at level 50, which was the level cap for A Realm Reborn. The story in A Realm Reborn is but I hear it gets a lot better. And which is great because I'm looking forward to, I think Heaven's Ward is next. But like I'm level 50 with six of the crafting classes, or two gathering classes and four crafting classes. And I'm almost level 50 in combat. This is more time than I've ever spent in any MMO. And I am excited about it.
Is that because you're a Final Fantasy fan, or is it just something specific about this game that works for you?
I am a Final Fantasy fan. I'm not the biggest Final Fantasy fan. But there is just something about this game that really works, and there's a lot of quality of life stuff in there that they have refined over time. And we have friends who've been playing since the beginning, and they're like, okay, well, this actually is improved. Like we get this like living history of the game when we're playing with them, because they talk about like, okay, well, crafting or leveling, it used to be you couldn't access this job unless you had leveled these two other jobs to a certain point. So you couldn't get that access to this combat class, even though it was in the base game. And now it's like, nope, you can have any combat class right from the beginning. And some of them mature. Like I started out as a Lancer, but then at level 30, I was able to turn into a Dragoon. And that's awesome because now I can jump.
And that's awesome. That's funny. And every time we have Heather Alexandra on the show, she goes on and on about how much she loves Final Fantasy 14. And, you know, it clearly is a beloved MMO at this point. People, it's really working, and I'm so glad, because I tried it when it first launched and it just didn't hook me. And I know it's very much a different game now than it was, but you know, MMOs are, as you said, they're a daunting, you have to fall in love with them, you really have to really commit. And so I haven't yet, but man, everybody talks about it.
Someone in the chat asked if it still has a monthly sub. It does. There's a lower tier one where if you only have one character. That's, I think, after tax for me is $12.80 a month. But there is a free trial now that they just improved it on both PC and PlayStation 4 that allows you to play. Okay, so the free trial dumped. It's like time restriction or something like that. You have to play up to a certain level now, I think.
All right. Very cool. It's Final Fantasy 14. I know both you and Christian are still crossing those animals. Christian, you want to jump in and talk a little Animal Crossing with Mike?
I still love it. My kids are still Nightmare Island owners in it. They're just like,
oh no.
Just dump their stuff anywhere. Like, there's no order. There's no reason. It's like, oh, I caught another one of these zebrafish. Plop it here. Where are you going to put... Go sell it.
You know what that is, Christian? That's just bad parenting is what that is.
And their mom keeps sending them letters, too. So it's the mom in the game. The dad never sends you a gift in the Animal Crossing. Thanks a lot, deadbeat Animal Crossing dad. I really love the game. I've been playing some nighttime Animal Crossing, and my goal is just to show them like a really nicely organized, like, oh yeah, yeah, dad's house does have multiple rooms. Like, why? Because I had focus when I played, kids. I knew what I was going. But it's hard for me to say, you know, anything else about the game that I haven't said. Jeff, I know I'll never get to convince you to play it, but it is just so dang magical. And and then I'll let Mike only praise the game, as I'm sure he will. But Gary Whitta's animal talking.
Oh my goodness.
So delightful. And I can only imagine the time he put in to build his little set. I'm not trying to be dismissive of it, but, you know, actual in the game world. And I'm so excited for the plans there. Elijah Wood, the story of Elijah Wood going, mm-hmm. getting in the turnip market. Like, it is a game that gives me delight even when I'm not playing, in the headlines and the stories. It was a game that brought me that before it even came out, with the crossover with Doom and, you know, in the fan art people were doing. And it's a real treat to see my oldest, now in our museum that they finally built, go in and like want to actually be interested about the animals in there, because there's also that story too of like the science teacher giving, we talked about Half-Life Alyx, how they taught on the window in VR, but people have done like real guided museum tours in their Animal Crossing museums. And my daughter like loves aquarium and loves like learning about, at one point she wanted to be a marine biologist, you know, she's four or whenever she was, she's like, I want to do that. And she still is interested in all that stuff. So like, she'll go in there and I can see like her wrestling with like the interesting information, but then also wanting just to go like run amok in the world, like pull at her. She's like, yeah, 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 I don't care about this fish anymore. And then she just goes and wreaks havoc. But I still love it. Mike, I'm curious, like when you play, do you have focus and goal, and are you like grinding out the turnip market all the right ways? Or are you kind of just going in and picking some weeds?
I go in with a purpose. Not the same purpose that my partner Amanda has. She is in the process of redesigning her island, and I'm just wildly impressed. Like, she has a patio cafe, and she's been, I showed her how to download the designs using the QR codes in the app. So she's done a ton with that. She's like, has like this custom kitchen with like cabinets that she downloaded, that are essentially, they're just like two dimensional. It's like going into an IKEA. but it's really, really neat. I'm not there yet, but I have like paid off all of my home loans. I have bridges that connect everything. I've got inclines. When I go in the morning, like I have this silly ritual that I go into my house, I pick out my clothes for the day, I find my four fossil spots, I find my money tree, I find my money rock, I find my money spot. I see what's at Mabel's, so I can see what new fashions there are, mostly because I'm just interested in all the weird like costume pieces at this point. And I am playing the turnip market. Like, I'm big into the turnip market right now. I found somebody who was selling low or buying or selling low today. I'm in a group. So once somebody hits big, like above 500, I'll know about it. We'll get the dodo code. We'll fly over, make a ton of money. Cause now I've got the new Nook store. So they're selling ridiculous things for like 100,000 bells. Right. So I gotta build up the bank account. I'm still only three stars though. I'm working on flowers. I have hedges now.
I'm never gonna. Yeah. It's our man. It looks like where Brad Pitt lives in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. You know what I mean? It's a trailer park. It is an unorganized, like a 1960s. You live behind a drive-in theater. It's bad. My kids are bad. Part of me, like, they say, you know, when you have kids, the anecdote, like you start hearing your parents in your own voice. Mm-hmm. And my dad doesn't listen to this. It's fine. Hey, Dad, happy birthday, Dad. But he would say, mostly to my older brother, hi, Henry, sorry. like, well, you know he's not going to take care of it. Like, if he wants to save up something, he could never buy that. He'll never take care of it. I mean, just look at his room. And that was always like the, like, his room was a mess. Therefore, he shouldn't get these Jordans or, you know, whatever it is. And I now think that I hear my dad saying that about my kids in Animal Crossing. Like, what did I expect their island would look like? Look at their room.
Well, our little terror. So we have three Switches in the house. And because Amanda decided that she was going to get the Animal Crossing one.
It's so beautiful.
She originally started Vivi on her Switch. And within 5 minutes of starting, tearing down fences, pulling stuff, we're like, okay, we're moving you to the other Switch now. Like, you need to stop. So she's got this remnant of Vivi's reign of terror on her island. She's like, I got to get rid of this tent. I got to progress her far enough that she has a house because I just can't.
Never forget.
You got to delete the account. Delete the user profile. Get it out of there. Whoop.
Can you do that?
I think so. I needed because my daughter has two. But anyway, yeah, like I said, real trash bin of an island, my island.
Oh, man. Animal Crossing. I also want to talk about one last thing, Mike, that you have been playing. And every time our friend Lana Bashinsky comes on the show from Riot, she talks about Ring Fit Adventures. And now, actually, just the other day on her Twitter feed, I saw pictures of all of the weight loss she's had from just doing Ring Fit Adventures. She's had just Ring Fit Adventures, the only thing that she's been doing. And amazing. She loves it. She thinks it's so fun. We've talked at length about it on the show. But she's really the only person I've talked to in IRL, you know, in real life, that has it and has been using it. What is your experience with Ring Fit Adventure?
Speaking of the turnip market, are you going to send kids to school with this thing?
I feel guilty talking about it a little bit only because it's so hard to find right now. I don't think Nintendo – well, obviously they weren't prepared for our current situation where people are like, oh, I would totally love a game that helps me work out. So it's really hard to find. But I've been doing it. I'm on day – I've done it for 29 days over about 6 weeks. Because I've mixed in some VR workouts as well. And it's a good workout. Now, if you like running in place, because you're running in the game and you strap on the strap and you got the Joy-Con on your left leg and you've got one attached to the ring con. So it kind of knows when you're running and it knows when you're high-stepping to go upstairs. And the ring con is really responsive for the most part. But it's a tough workout. I finished the first day and I was like, this is a video game. Why am I feeling like it kicked my butt? And over time, I've been able to up the difficulty. I am moving through the game. I think I've finished something like 12 worlds. It's an RPG and you right. Slot your different skills. So there's legs, arms. I mean, you guys have talked about this, so you're familiar with the basics, but it's a really good workout. I have some nitpicks about it. Just that there are not all of the exercises for all the different parts of the body progress at the same rate. So you could end up with not having an arm exercise that's as strong as your leg, abs, and yoga exercises. Hmm. So it is a game and that does impact the gameplay of it because each of the different color enemies are vulnerable to different types of attacks.
And it's fun. Like that's the yes. most important part for me that as a game, regardless of the workout, it's fun enough that you want to do it.
Mm-hmm. I would say it's fun enough that I go for longer than I realize I'm going for.
Yeah, that's great. See, that's the key, I think, to something like that is that you push yourself not because you feel like, oh, I got to finish my workout, but because you're actually engaged.
Mm-hmm. It does the job. It definitely gamifies the workout routine in a way that gets people to come back. And it's encouraging and it's all the things you need a workout to be in order to feel good when you're done. The biggest challenges about it are if the Joy-Con strap slips a little bit and it isn't on the right part of your leg, some of the exercises don't read terribly well. And a lot of those are the ones where you're on the ground without the ring con, where you're doing like knee to chest or some of those. If it doesn't read quite well, then there's a little bit of momentary discouragement. Like, well, I know I did that. Like, why isn't it giving me the credit that I know I should get in terms of beating the crud out of one of these little cute monsters?
I love that this game, I say this every time we talk about it, but it started out as a butt of a joke for me, you know, like some weird Nintendo being Nintendo, and it's turned into actually the little engine that could. It's people dig it. It's fun. It's effective. Good. I'm happy. I'm happy to have been so wrong. I don't know if anybody saw a couple of weeks ago, there was a story about the dude who streams video games, mostly Dark Souls, using weird controllers.
Oh, yeah.
Just finished Dark Souls 2, Dark Souls? I can't remember which one. Using only the Ring Fit controller.
That's wild.
The video is him just drenched in sweats. It's pretty great. Yeah. All right. Well, you know, Mike's here and he does a lot of writing about tabletop games. He's played VR. So we're going to try to get to a lot more fun stuff. But first, I want to thank our second sponsor, which is Audible. You hear me talk about Audible a lot in recent weeks. That's because they want me to inform you about a new scripted audio commentary. A new scripted audio comedy written by John Lutz of SNL and 30 Rock. It stars Paul Rudd and an all-star comedy cast, Jack McBrayer, Paul Appel, Amber Ruffin, so many others. It's called Escape from Virtual Island. It is set on a remote luxury resort island in the year 2038, where adventure seekers flock to live out their wildest fantasies in custom-made virtual reality simulations. When an important guest goes missing, a ragtag search party led by Paul Rudd's maladjusted resort heir plunge deep into the world of VR in hopes of returning with the lost guest and some sense of reality. Start your spring off completely lost in comedy delight. Escape from Virtual Island. You can listen free with a 30-day trial. Just go to audible.com/virtualisland or text Virtual Island to 500-500. I have been playing a ton of VR lately. I think maybe it's a combination of being stuck in the house and wanting to feel like I'm in another place in time, and also having finished Half-Life Alyx and just craving more awesome experiences in VR. I've been playing lots of VR stuff. And I know you and I both played The Room VR recently, Mike.
Yes.
Pretty fun, right? Pretty cool.
Yeah. Like,
combination of an adventure game and kind of an escape room idea.
Have you played the mobile games?
I haven't. Well, that's not true. I dabbled with them, but I didn't really play them in earnest. I've heard they're very, very good.
Yeah, they're excellent. Very, very good. Oh, so good. They've just gotten better and better, and the Room VR takes all of the evolution of the mobile games, which are now like on PC, and some of them are even on Switch at this point, and just does very cool stuff with it.
Yeah, it becomes very physical, like physical manipulation of items. And it's a lot of like puzzle boxes and cranks and levers and stuff, which all work so well in VR.
Yeah, that was what attracted me to the mobile ones as well, because they really make it becomes very tactile. And that's always something that is challenging in VR, where you have to bridge that divide. It's weird, like Vader Immortal. When I played it, one of the things that jumped out at me was like how cool it was to climb ladders in that game.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and I feel like the same thing about the Room VR. It always has that, it has that very creepy, almost Lovecraftian element to it.
Yeah, it is very Lovecraftian. That's for sure. Yeah. It does a lot of that psychological stuff, and it's neat. I mean, it's hard to play anything after Half-Life Alyx for me, just from a visual standpoint, but it's competent and it's clever. It's smart. I like the construction of the puzzles. I'm not super in love with the teleportation of, you know, node to node, but it works for a game like this, right? Where you need to be standing here and you're just going to work on this puzzle and figure it. I mean, it's basically an escape room. So I can't really say I should be able to roam around the room. There's no reason to. It does everything it needs to do, and it does it pretty well.
For, you know, one of the earliest VR games that I fell in love with was I Expect You to Die. So when they announced that The Room was coming to VR, I was like, okay, it's going to take all of the cool little escape elements I love from I Expect You to Die and bring them, you know, into this setting that I've played the first three Room games. I think there's four on mobile. Man, I love that franchise. I love everything that they've evolved it into. So I'm super excited. Like every time I dive into that, I haven't finished it yet, but I'm digging it.
Yeah. It's strong. It's a very worthy, worth people's time. If you have a VR headset, The Room VR, what else have you been playing in VR?
I mentioned that I was mixing in some workouts, into my Ring Fit stuff when I need a little bit of a break. And I started doing Box VR.
Yeah.
And I made the mistake on the first day of just jumping into the daily workout after they did the tutorial. And that hurt a lot. But the one I'm super into right now, it just came out. It's called Supernatural VR. And
I don't know this one.
So it's, if you think about the Beat Saber concept where you've got, two things in each hand and you're hitting targets in a very specific way, this one is designed specifically around the concept of working out. So whereas Beat Saber was originally like 120 degree, you face forward and that's your field of view. Yeah. But they later added the 360 degree to it. Supernatural VR is designed, with 360 degrees, but there are two big conceits to it. One is that every place that you are working out is in a beautiful place somewhere on Earth. So the Galapagos Islands or Iceland,
oh, that's cool.
And it's gorgeous and it's bright and it feels very open. And the other thing is that there are trainers. So there is a trainer talking you through everything. And so it's got new music. So like there's a Lizzo track in one of the workouts, for instance. And the trainer's talking you through and it guides you in 360 degrees. So you're hitting targets with both arms and you're turning and so it's perfect for the quest. Because you're not tethered.
Right.
But there's also, it's a full body workout. So there are these triangles that come at you. So you know how Beat Saber has like the red bars and that you have to like kind of move around and duck around?
Yeah.
This game has triangles. And if there's an isosceles or an equilateral triangle, like it's just a squat. And there are lunges as well. So there are isosceles triangles in either direction so that you're lunging. And then there are some where it moves. So like you're shifting your body and hitting targets while you're kind of squatting or lunging. And at the same time, some of the targets have, I think Elite Beat Agents is a good one. You know how if you play that, you tap, but there's also somewhere you like drag it across the screen.
Right. Yeah.
It's the same thing where you hit the target and you keep your arm moving until you hit the next target.
Right.
So it's a full body workout. It's really great. It syncs up with like an Apple Watch and there's a mobile app as well. And
so it's not pretending to be anything other than a workout. It's really saying, hey, you're here to work out.
Yes. But it is very gamified. It does take that Beat Saber concept and kind of strips away the idea that, okay, you're going to work out while you're playing this awesome game. This is, you're going to work out. And there's a cool gamification element to it. So it's more on the it's definitely along the lines of Box VR as opposed to something like Pistol Whip, which is very much a game that really keeps you moving.
Yeah, it just happens to make you sweat. Mm-hmm. yeah. Again, that's called Supernatural VR,
and it's like a fee, right? Like 30 days free, and then did you mention that it's like $20 a month, something like that?
Yeah, I think it's $19 a month after the first month, and there are daily workouts. So.
Oh, interesting.
So it is a subscription, but again, if you are someone who regularly goes to the gym and you're not paying a gym fee right now, then the $19 a month, it's fairly affordable. I'm assuming that pays for the trainers because again, there's a trainer in your ear through most of it and the music licensing because uses a lot of very new music.
And programming too, I'd imagine. Like, you know, aside from the trainer, and you're like building out, if you're actually building out. I've heard about this from Jeff, but Mike, I'm curious your take, as I've thought about Supernatural and I've thought about it more as just I play Beat Saber. What's your solution for sweating in the headset?
Not good right now. but one of the cool things is that there are silicon inserts that they're selling along with Supernatural that are like $12. So even if you don't have any interest in that, if you go to their website, you can order one of those silicon inserts. So it's designed specifically for working out in VR. So you're not getting the padding all nasty. But we typically wipe it down with like a Clorox wipe when we're done.
Dang, so you have Ring Fit Adventure and Clorox wipes? What are you?
I know.
The Monopoly man over there?
They toilet paper rolls.
Honestly, the Clorox wipes are just a leftover from before, because, boy, we tried to get some more when all this started, and that didn't happen. Man,
not easy. Christian, I have a couple more VR games I've been playing. One of them, I think, Christian, you might be interested to check out. I know it's not a great time to do horror stuff, just because, you know.
I do it every day. I go on a walk with my kids. Exactly. I go to the grocery store.
There's a new game on Quest called Lies Beneath that I've been checking out. And I think this is really up your alley, Christian. It's very much a playable graphic novel. And
oh, yes, yes. I almost bought this.
It's cool. I'm digging it, dude. It's, again, hard to play anything after Half-Life Alyx, because it's not that level. But much smaller team. It is – I think it excels in its minimalistic nature, and it does what it does pretty well, pretty smartly. The graphic style is this kind of rad, cel-shaded graphic novel thing. But the best part about it is the storytelling. It's like you're walking through a graphic novel. You literally – walk up to text boxes that you would find in a comic book and read them. And then you're wandering around. Oh, and there's another text box like hanging out over that tree. I'll walk over closer to it and then read the next part of the story. Very, very cleverly done. The whole story is set up with a actual comic book that you stand in front of and reach out and turn the page on. But they do some really cool stuff too, where you, as you're in VR and you move your head around, like the images have layers and depth to them. So they kind of shift and move as you look at them. It's a neat effect, and one that I think it makes it jump to life and come off the page. It's not like you're just staring at a flat image. Very clever game. It's spooky, scary. You know, it's a survival horror type of a situation where there's big, horrible things happening in the woods. And relatively linear, and you know, there's shooting and stabbing and violence and all that stuff, but it's a pretty well told story. You get in a car accident with your dad, I believe, and you know, you're in the woods and you got to figure out what to do and where to go, and I'm digging it. It's called Lies Beneath. It's on Quest, which is what I was playing it on, and I think it's pretty darn good. I think it's like $14. I think it's well worth it.
Yeah, I think it looks beautiful. What I keep holding out for, and I haven't heard anything, maybe I just missed it because of like the weight of the world. I really want to play that Walking Dead VR game. I think it'd be.
Oh, I've played that. It's real good.
There's supposed to be a Quest version, because I have a hard time. Well, Link Cable, Half-Life Alyx, that'll be my next linked game.
I keep meaning to send it to you, and I just haven't done it yet. I'm sorry.
Well, I'll give you a new address in a week. Hopefully. My wife is leaving me. What I'm saying is, I think there's a Quest version in development, and I'm excited to play that version. I think in my head, I've decided that's my next horror VR game.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, The Walking Dead is pretty good. It is full on, you know, survival horror, but it is, I mean, that's a game where you stab things with a knife, and then you have to push farther in to get the knife into their skull to kill them. And then you have to yank it twice to get it all the way out.
So that's what you're dealing with. It looks real good. Alyx first. And then maybe by the time I finish Alyx, that'll be out.
Yeah. One last one before we move on, and I know we're going long, but I want to talk about Slinger VR, which is another game I've played, which is another in a long line. And believe me, the line can be as long as it needs to, because I love every new addition into this subgenre. A long line of basically Spider-Man simulators in VR. This is a puzzle game where you are attempting to basically fling yourself through a magical portal that's hanging in space in all this crazy wild geometry. And the only way to move around is to throw out these sort of magical Spider-Man webs and swing. Pretty great. It is not a complete home run. I think it's pretty simplistic. And I mean, it is a pure puzzle game. Like, it tells you how long it took you to get there, and you're just basically trying to beat your time. And it ramps up. The complexity gets more interesting. It is this kind of crazy M.C. Escher levels where you're standing on a platform that's hovering in space in, you know, this infinite void of chaos, and there's swirling shapes and, you know, spiraling upside down platforms all up and down and far away, and you just kind of leap off and start swinging your way through it. All of that, by the way, I mean to say in a very positive way, because that's cool and fun, and it gives you a great sensation of swinging. And as you bend the light beam that is your spider web, you pull yourself closer, and you have a lot of control over the distance. And there's literally no other movement than swinging. Even when you're very close to things, if you're standing on a platform, there's no way to walk or teleport. You literally have to reach out and pull yourself along with the spider webs. And like I said, it gets more complex. There are things where the portal is shut off and you have to turn beams on or off in certain areas. And it makes you go in much, you know, indirect routes to the goal, and lots of difficulty levels. It's good. It's called Slinger VR. I recommend it. It's not as good as Windlands 2, which Windlands 1 was great too, but Windlands 2 does everything this game does, but also has a really interesting story and cool fiction and an awesome world building. And, you know, Windlands 2 is very, very good. And so it actually made me nostalgic for Windlands 2, and I reinstalled it and started playing that a little bit. So it's hard for me to recommend Slinger VR more than Windlands 2, although I think it's about half the price of Windlands 2. So there's that. But very worth playing and fun, and a great concept. But these are games, in contrast to Walking Dead or Lies Beneath, that are the kinds of things that I enjoy right now, in particular in VR, where I can just be in a place and just be flinging myself around. You know, it's just, I'm just Spider-Man in an infinite abstract world of shapes and colors. And I don't have to think about the real world, and I don't have to think about things trying to get me or shooting stuff. It's just pure, you know, flight of fancy movement, locomotion. It's good stuff. Anyway, I highly recommend Windlands 2. All right, let's talk. I know we're long, but let's talk some tabletop time.
Right now.
Mike, I couldn't have you on and not talk tabletop time, because I know you
Yes.
write a lot about board games. And so I'm curious, there's one game in here in particular that I really want to hear about, because I've been flirting with buying it myself. So let's start with that, actually. Marvel Champions is a living card game from Fantasy Flight that I keep wanting to get. Are you digging Marvel Champions?
I would strongly suggest you get it. It's so good.
That's not what I need to hear right now.
I know. I am the worst for people's wallets. That happens all the time. All the time. There was somebody when we were at PAX, we sat down and we were talking about Marvel United, which is a different, I'm a huge Marvel fan, which is a completely different game with like a bunch of little minis, and I
Yeah,
like hundreds of dollars of this person's money. I convinced them to get it. Marvel Champions is fantastic. I'm a huge fan of Fantasy Flight's living card games. I've played Arkham. I've played Star Wars living card game. Rest in peace. I played Netrunner. Rest in peace. They've really sunset a lot of these things. Yeah. Lord of the Rings.
Living is a short term phrase.
But for those who don't know, the living card game format, it's different than a traditional collectible card game because there are fixed distributions. So you know exactly what you're getting in every expansion. And the way they've set up expansions for this is different than the way they've done everything else, all their other living card games, where you're either buying a hero pack and it has a pre-constructed deck of, I think it's 40 cards for that hero. And there are also villain packs where that add a new villain to the game. So the core box comes with five heroes. It's She-Hulk, Iron Man, Black Panther,
Spider-Man.
Spider-Man is definitely one of them, and Captain Marvel. So those are the five, and the villains are Rhino, Claw, and Ultron. Right. And they've added Captain America, Miss Marvel, Thor, and Doctor Strange is coming. And I'm trying to think, like, who else they've announced. The bad guys, they added Green Goblin. They added the Wrecking Crew, which plays completely differently. So the way it works is you pick who you're fighting against. You have your own decks, and you can play with the pre-constructed decks that they recommend in the core box. The core box, differently than every other Fantasy Flight Living card game, you can play out of the box with four players.
Yeah.
Which is great. And it comes with the three villains. There's a hard mode for each of the villains, and it's very cooperative. And I say, obviously it's a cooperative game, but even the way it works, there's a lot of table talk involved. And some cooperative
because the villains attack you, but they also have like an evil scheme that they're trying to accomplish, yeah. Right? And one of the coolest things about this game, one of the things that I'm like, oh, I want that, is that you're able to switch back and forth between your superhero persona and your alter ego once per turn. And there's things that actually Peter Parker can do that are useful when he's not Spider-Man, right?
Exactly. And there's a lot of strategy to that. Because not only can you switch back to Peter Parker, you get that version's ability. So you get your alter ego ability, but you can heal up as an alter ego, and you're not going to get attacked by the villain. Instead, when it comes around to you, the villain is going to scheme instead of attack, which means they're going to try to progress their evil plan. So you can either lose by having everybody knocked out, or you can lose if the master plan is accomplished. And just like all of these living card games that are cooperative, you have villains that pop up and you need to, and those get assigned. They kind of attack specific heroes. There are events that you need to deal with. What's cool about this is hand management is really interesting. It's handled very differently. You actually kind of want to spend your cards because each of your cards, you know, has its own ability that it can do, but it has a cost. And the way you pay for that is by spending other cards that have their own currency value in paying for cards. Right. But if you go through all of your cards, you actually just shuffle up and then you have your deck back. But there's a penalty for it. You have to draw another encounter card immediately when you shuffle, and you resolve it the next time the villain goes. So there is so you get all your cards back, but there's a penalty to it. It makes for a really interesting dynamic. And there are, you know, you could be going through and feeling like, hey, we're doing really well. Or you could be behind and then have to adapt to that. Every hero comes with their own specific, like, I can't remember exactly what it's called, but it's their own bad thing. So like Peter Parker's is, I think that he's overdue on his rent, and right. Yeah. Like you have to do something to get rid of that card, or else it'll continue to haunt you. So there are things that pop up along the way that you as a hero or their alter ego have to deal with in order to be able to focus back on the villain. So there's very much that comic book element.
Man. It just sounds super rad. And you can play it as a solo game or two players. It's up to four.
It scales really well.
Yeah, I heard it actually is really good as a two-player game.
It is.
As well, which is, you know, pretty great. So Marvel Champions from Fantasy Flight is the name. I have also been playing Everdell, which you have listed here as
Yay.
Well. I kickstarted it. So are you digging Everdell? Didn't it just come out with an expansion for that too?
There are a couple of expansions. I think there's three now. We have one, Pearl Brook, which we're about to get to the table. We've now played it enough times that we're like, okay, let's add it. They don't recommend that you play with all of the expansions at once. They mm-hmm. recommend that you do one at a time, because there's the Pearl Brook, I believe, it covers over part of the board and then adds some new stuff to it. So it's a very cool engine building game.
It's cool. It's really a beautiful game. The art is fantastic. It's like a three-dimensional board where you've got, you know, like a tree house basically that you put together and put things on top of. But it's basically a very light worker placement game. I mean, I guess not that light. It's fairly light. But it's got some cool dynamics to it, really lovely components. For me, the big draw is how pretty a game it is.
Yes. It's a very pretty game. And those components, those rubbery berries.
The berries, man. Yes. I just want to hold them in my hand. they're lovely little, like, as you said, rubbery berries that are a currency that you get in the game too.
And like the stones are nice and smooth, and the amber is great, or the resin. And then you've got the wooden sticks. What I really like about the game is there's a lot of variability to it each time you play, because there are events that are common every time, but then there are these cards that you deal out that are like, well, if you have these two characters or these two villagers in your town, you can then spend a worker to go and claim this victory thing. And it gives you a chunk of victory points.
Yeah. Yeah, it's cool. And the art is so great that it like has that little person in the picture of the place. So the card with the place has the person, and the card with the person has the place. It's very clever. Very, very clever.
And that mechanic where you're only going through about half of the deck every time you play. And there's this central marketplace where on your turn, instead of placing a worker, and this is one of the things I really like, is it gives you a lot of flexibility. If you have a specific building, you can then get the villager for free.
Right.
And there's only 15 spots in your village, so you have to kind of be economical and think about, okay, what exactly is my end game here? How am I scoring my points?
Yeah, we like this one quite a bit. It's called Everdell, and I think it's pretty popular on BGG right now too. So, but I have to say, I have a bit of a blind spot for the next game, because I guess I was a little too old when Power Rangers happened. I never got into the Power Rangers, but people love the Power Rangers, and you've been playing the new Power Rangers video game, Heroes of the Grid. Board game.
Yeah, this is the board game. So Battle for the Grid is the video game. Heroes of the Grid. This is Renegade Games. This was kickstarted. Actually, I wasn't a huge Power Rangers fan. I always, when I was a kid, or when I was, I guess I was in high school when Power Rangers hit, I always saw it as knockoff Voltron.
So. Yeah, me too. This is a dumb little side story, but I was an exchange student to Japan when I was in high school. And while I was there, we saw these people dressed in these weird costumes at Tokyo Disneyland. And we thought it was the goofiest thing. My friend and I made fun of it. It was this goofiest thing. Look, they're trying to be Voltron and they're just in these terrible costumes. And then like 3 months after we got back, it arrived in America and became this huge thing. And I had this bad taste in my mouth because I had seen it before I knew what it was at all. And it just seemed like the most goofy thing. Anyway, so I never got into Power Rangers.
So I'll be honest, I wouldn't have been so attracted to this game if it wasn't designed by Jonathan Ying, because I'm a huge, huge Star Wars Imperial Assault fan.
Yeah.
And I have everything for that game. I'm running a campaign for the kids that we need to get back to. I have this whole like PowerPoint that kind of tracks like all the story beats in the game. But Jonathan Ying, he did Star Wars Imperial Assault. He did Doom for Fantasy Flight.
Right, it's a good game.
Yeah, it's rad. And he did the Nickelodeon Splat Attack, which had some issues, but was. Like, but it was like all of these wonderful Nickelodeon characters. So it's also a very cooperative game. It's very challenging. The minis are nice and big. I have like a giant Megazord mini on my. It's not even anywhere near the game. It's in my office. It's so pretty. And the way it works is you've got a monster and a boss, and you need to, like, there's a lot of combos that need to happen, a lot of table talk, it's good for us with the kids. The kids love playing cooperative games. But they also love like a really good, you know, they love competitive games. They love cooperative games. If we can get them around the table, if we can get them like talking and like strategizing, they feel great. And I got it mostly to play with the kids. I'm not a huge Power Rangers fan. Like I have found some love for it, but the game design is really what attracted me to it. So, if you have any interest in Power Rangers at all, it is very lovingly handled.
And that's Power Rangers Heroes of the Grid. Christian, you have been sitting around a table doing some cardboard manipulation as well, haven't you?
Yeah, so I've ordered some new ones, and we've blasted through some ones we've had sitting around. And as we talk about table time, I want to remind people of the joy of puzzles, you know, those little cardboard
jigsaw puzzles.
Jigsaw puzzles, yes, not the reboot of Saw Jigsaw, but like you do it at the table or ground. And my kids have started advancing from like the, you know, I feel like when you have little kids, it's not uncommon to see like toddlers, like those blocks, like wooden blocks. And then I feel like for a lot of people, maybe they kind of fall off. And I found for us, the key was to find puzzles that are actually good cardboard. A lot of times, you know, if you're at Target or wherever and you're like, there's the Frozen 2 puzzle. I mean, some of those have been hit and miss, right? Like those impulse purchases or like holiday or birthday gifts or whatever. And it's like an IP the kids love, but the puzzle itself is poor quality in terms of the weight of the cardboard or the cut. Like there's nothing more frustrating than dealing with a complicated part of a puzzle and you think it's right, but it doesn't fit the way it should. Very frustrating. So I'd recommend getting, you know, reading reviews or finding some good puzzles that have a nice weight to them and a good clean cut. And then the two I ordered, this is not a promoted part, but I've talked about Mondo and their posters a whole bunch. They have some really cool puzzles, and I took the plunge on a couple of thousand pieces. I sent you a link to one, Jeff. They have a D&D box.
I know that D&D box is so close. The old classic red box D&D. I also like that Captain America one you showed me. It looks so rad.
Yeah, so I bought the Captain America one, and then I bought two. They have a U.S. National Parks puzzle. I bought two. Surprise to person I gift the other one to, if you're listening. And I think
me?
No, that'd be the Dungeons and Dragons one. Which is going to be a bear of a puzzle, man. Cause it's just like the thick red borders that are just like, have fun. But to me, as someone who fell off of jigsaw puzzles for a while, because as a young adult, I had this thing where like, I need to finish it. And to me, the key is to be able to have a place where you can leave it.
And yeah, for sure.
I find that so joyful now to just walk by and be like, oh, maybe there's a, I got one, and then move on. And I've kind of like let go of like when I let go of like Xbox achievements, you know, and like that
the
kind
girls
of
girls don't mess with it though. They don't, well, so no potential of getting it messed up.
The thousand piecers, that's going to be the next step, right? That I have a table in mind where they're going to sit and be off the floor for a dog and stuff. But right now it's coffee table and we're doing 100. I think the biggest we've done is a 250. And so they know that that's going to be our project for the week, right? And we'll tinker with it. The first time we did the 250, my youngest swept the table because she wanted a color there. And I get that, you know, small space. But there are some beautiful jigsaw puzzles out there now. And then if you like it so much, you can always put a little like glue on it. You've got a beautiful picture to hang.
Awesome. All right, I need to thank our final sponsor, which is Postmates. Well, we're in a Postmates world. We're in a Postmates world, so you should be using Postmates. We are staying at home, and food can be brought to you. You don't have to just limit yourself to things that actually already deliver. And I've been using Postmates now because we can't just make food for ourselves all the time. We make a lot of food for ourselves, but my wife and I have decided – there are some nights where we just want it to be taken care of. And from late night tacos, you know, to even just like an early morning smoothie, you just kind of need food delivered to you fast. And that's where Postmates comes in. So Postmates can get you stuff in your neighborhood, local stuff that you don't usually deliver. It can get it delivered right to you. No more trips to the store. You know, you can stay in and be safe and not have to put that mask on. Just go download the Postmates app on iOS or Android. Find your favorites. Get anything you want delivered within the hour. And for a limited time, Postmates is giving listeners of DLC $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days. What? $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days? To start your free deliveries, download the app and use the promo code DLC. That's promo code DLC for $100 of free delivery credits with no minimum purchase for your first 7 days when you download the Postmates app. Anything you need, anytime you need it, Postmate it. All right. That's going to do it for this episode of DLC. We do have parting gifts coming up, so stick around for those. But Mike Futter, thank you so much for being here, man. What a great time it's been chatting with you.
Thank you so much for having me. I've absolutely loved this.
I'm glad to hear that. Tell folks where they can keep up with you and the things you do online.
Oh, great. Thanks. On Twitter, I'm at Futterish, F-U-T-T-E-R-I-S-H. And I also have a podcast that focuses on the business of games for the rest of us called Virtual Economy. So that's at Virtual Econcast.
Very, very cool. Christian Spicer, what about you? What do you got going on?
Twitter is always a good way to see things as they happen. I am at Spicer, and then twitch.tv/Christian Spicer, where I stream this show typically at 7:15 p.m. Pacific. And then in May, we'll be doing the bulk of my streaming to raise money for St. Jude. So it'll be Friday nights. I'll be playing Monster Hunter World. And then Saturdays, I have fun streams like this coming Saturday at 8 p.m. Pacific with you and Tim. I'll be playing some Streets of Rage 4 in the background, and we'll be hanging out and chatting. So head over to twitch.tv/Christian Spicer and come hang out with us.
Very, very cool. You know what we did this week actually for the first time was I did the Jackbox thing. Man, that's fun. It's so well done.
It's so well done.
It's so easy to do as a stream. So easy to do and so fun. So great. Such perfect thing for you know, our current situation of not being able to be in the same room with people. Very well done. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Jeff Cannata, which is spelled with two N's and one T. You can email this show here, DLC, by sending us an email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. We love getting your emails, letting us know what you think about the show, telling us games that maybe we've missed that you'd like to tell us about. Anything. We love your comments, dlcfeedback@gmail.com. I also have a couple of other shows if you want to hear more of me during your week. I talk about movies and TV shows over at the Slash Filmcast. You can find that at slashfilmcast.com. We had a really fun episode last week, a wild one, with Alan Yang, a famous director and writer. Alan Yang from he did Master of None. He decided what movie we were going to talk about, and we talked about Demolition Man from 1993.
Nice.
So it's a wild one. Great, great episode. Also, I brought back We Have Concerns with Anthony Carboni. We're back doing a comedy science show. Keeps you informed about stuff in the science world and makes you laugh. You can find that at wehaveconcerns.com or anywhere you get podcasts. And I also have a long-form D&D show, live play Dungeons and Dragons. Very much proud of it. We're continuing also in the stay-at-home world with a side adventure. I urge you to check it out. I think you'll like it. We just had our 1 year anniversary of that show, and I'm super proud of it. You can find that anywhere you get podcasts by searching for The Dungeon Run. You can find it on YouTube by searching for The Dungeon Run there. It's a video show, or you can watch it live as we record on Wednesday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific time at caffeine.tv/The Dungeon Run. All right, let's wrap the show up now with our parting gifts.
Hey, give us a suggestion of what to do this week. Give us a parting gift. This is your parting gift.
Mike, do you have a suggestion to help people get through their week?
Absolutely. If you've got your eye on a Lego set, go do it. Just let the pieces fly onto the table and just put them together. It's a zen moment. I've been holding onto my Voltron set, and I think this is the week I finally bust it out and do it.
Oh man, I just googled that Voltron set because I saw you wrote it down here, and ooh, that's nice. That looks
is that
real
like
nice.
The off-brand Power Ranger set? Or I'm confused.
The off-brand Power Ranger set, exactly. They're all lions. Why aren't they dinosaurs?
I dig it. Yeah, I got that like Imperial TIE Fighter, super fancy Imperial TIE Fighter one that's sitting put together. So that's kind of like what you said, Christian, about a puzzle. It's almost the same thing.
Yes, and 100%.
Puzzle with instructions. Great, great recommendation, Mike. Thank you. Christian Spicer, how about you? What's your parting gift?
We watched Dolphin Reef on Disney Plus recently, and it is just joyful. It's, you know, nature documentaries are just, they're so beautiful. I don't know. I mean, Planet Earth, all of those, Planet Earth 2, and Dolphin Reef is, it tells like a little story, and it's Natalie Portman doing the narration, and she knocks it out of the park, or I guess, yeah, the narration. And it's kind enough that like the circle of life stuff wasn't too scarring for my youngest daughter. I feel like at the whole time I'm watching, I'm like, and here's the time where the baby dolphin dies. This is going to, oh no.
Where's the shark? Can eat the dolphin?
The orca has entered, oh no, separated from her mother and storm comes. But it does it really well. And it's absolutely beautiful. And if you already have Disney Plus and you haven't watched it yet, check out Dolphin Reef.
Awesome. We have a listener suggested parting gift. Before I do that, I forgot to mention in the Tabletop Time segment, I was going to apologize because I got a lot of emails this week from people who were offended that I belittled foosball. Last week, I said foosball was random and didn't require a lot of skill like crokinole or billiards. And boy, did that rile people up. I apologize. Clearly, I don't have the foosball skills. I've always viewed it as a bit of a chaotic game, but people sent me videos and YouTube clips and explanations of how foosball is a skill game, and I stand corrected. So I apologize for that, for ever besmirching the good name of foosball. I mean that honestly. I sounded like I was being sarcastic, but I mean it honestly. Anyway, so here is our listener-suggested parting gift, which was sent to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. This was sent by Wyatt from Columbus, Ohio. Wyatt says, today I have a parting gift that may be especially appealing to tabletop gaming fans. However, this can be certainly enjoyed by everyone. It's the comic book series Die by writer Kieron Gillen, artist Stephanie Hans, and published by Image Comics. This series is about a group of six teenagers in the 90s who disappear into a D&D-style fantasy role-playing game, and only five return. Nearly 30 years later, these broken adults are dragged back to discover the game isn't finished with them yet. As you can tell from the description, it's like a cross between Jumanji and Lord of the Rings, but it is intended for mature readers. Gillen does a great job weaving a narrative of fantasy, magic, and mystery that creates tension while maintaining the emotions and traits of his characters. Han's artwork is absolutely gorgeous, and it has a paint-on-canvas aesthetic that I love. Overall, it is a great series, and I hope you, as well as other listeners, give it a shot. Thank you for everything you do, and keep up the great work on the show. Thank you, Wyatt. Christian, do you know about this series, Die?
I do not.
Yeah, it sounds like an awesome one. Image, man. Image has got some great, great, great comics, so we'll check this out.
Yes, and now is the time to do it. Especially if you can find a way to get it
save like the comics industry
curbside from your local creator or your local shop or something like that. And Creators for Comics have done some great fundraising. And if you are into it, now is the time to find ways to support it. Yeah.
My parting gift is the show The Last Dance on ESPN, which is all about the Bulls in the 90s, the Chicago Bulls basketball team. Man, even if you're not into sports, what an awesome documentary series this is. Really digging deep on the interpersonal relationships of the team. And, you know, everybody knows about Michael Jordan. Everybody knows Michael Jordan, even if you weren't really around to watch that team. I was. And boy, I remember those years just being blown away by what they were able to accomplish with six championships. But this is such a well put together, in-depth look at, you know, the quest for that sixth championship, with lots of really juicy stuff and just wild personalities and so many, such great archival footage. If you have a chance to watch it, it's been on ESPN. It's not easily streamed, but man, I'm digging it. The Last Dance. All right. That's going to do it for this episode of DLC. Thanks again to Mike Footer and Jeff, or Jeff, me, and Christian Spicer for hanging out with me, Jeff. And thanks to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star for those fun bumpers. Thank you to our chat room for hanging out with us in real time. And thank you to each and every one of you for downloading us. We really appreciate it. Until next time, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.